Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your good friend, the very esteemed and well-travelled Clarence Copernicus Cloverleaf, welcoming you to another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon. You can always feel free to call in at 602-753-1883 to ask a question to the host or any of his well-established guests. Just please remember when calling in to be on your best behavior. This is a G-rated show, you know. Hey, that was a wicked rhyme. Anywho, just be sure to be kind and courteous. Now, on to the main event. Hello to all our dear listeners. This is your spokesman with a plan, Clarence Cloverleaf, coming to you after somewhat of an absent spell, as since December of 2018, I've been sailing around the world. From Italy to Canada, I've been making my way across this beautiful land of ours, searching for new meaning to an older existence. I'm happy to say I'm back now, and here to let you in on some stuff going on as of late. In mid-2018, the Cloverleaf Radio Network expanded to include our friends Josh and Ariana over at Night Moves Radio. It's been a splendid partnership, and Jimmy, Jane, and I are happy to welcome them to the family. They also brought along Soul Stories, which features inspiring poetry, read by the author herself, Ariana Cherry. We've been brought onto many new networks, including Anchor, the ASY podcasting network, WordPress, Podbean, even iHeartRadio. We've also started a fresh new YouTube page, as well as updating our Twitter, Blog Talk Radio, and expanding our network to new segments, more radio reunions, all news guests, and so much more. Also, the Cloverleaf Radio Network, Jimmy, Ariana, and Josh, will be appearing upcoming at two conventions, SilCon and Dark History Con. SilCon will be held September 6th and 7th, 2019, at Cross County Mall in Mattoon, Illinois, while Dark History Con will be held October 26th and 27th, 2019, at the City Center Performance Venue in Champaign, Illinois. Be sure and check out the newest guest appearances, as well as find out about up-to-date ticket information by visiting www.silcon.com or www.dhhcon.com.
All righty, we are back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I hate to cut off Clarence, but I think you got everything that you needed to get out. We're back for the Man on the Moon 20th Anniversary Radio Reunion, and it's an honor to welcome back Little Wendy Poland and Greg Travis. How are you guys?
Fine, thanks. How are you? Hello?
I'm good. How are you, Wendy?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good.
Well, I wish I could have called up Jim Carrey or someone and had him join us, but I don't have those kind of connections. It's an honor to have you guys.
Yeah, same here.
We're not Jim Carrey, but I guess we'll do.
Yeah.
Well, I automatically thought of you guys because I think you're the only cast members of the show I'd interviewed in the past, so I knew that you would be the place to start, and it worked out great.
Wonderful.
Well, I guess going back those 20 years, how did you guys first find out or were approached about working in Man on the Moon?
I'll let Greg go first.
Oh, okay. I know the writers, Larry and Scott, who wrote the film. And I read for a couple of different roles, and with director Milos, and so then I got one of them, and when I found out I got it, I was thrilled to be a part of the Andy Kaufman story. So it was just I was around starting as a stand-up when Andy was at the top of his game, and I knew him from the improv, and I also knew one of his friends, Mel Shearer, who was a good friend of mine, and had met him several times, you know, socially, and went to see his show at the Tiffany when he took everybody for milk and cookies afterwards, and, you know, everybody was at that Hollywood show, so it was a lot of fun, and just really was a big fan of Andy's, so it was just nice to be a part of the movie.
That's awesome.
And
go ahead, Wendy.
Yeah. So, like, when I heard that they were writing a movie about Andy, I talked to the writers, and I said, look, I said, I will talk to you if you're going to take the high road. And I knew that they would take the high road because that's what they did with The People versus Larry Flint. I thought, you know, they really, that was so well done and everything. And then, and they were, I just love those two guys. And then they actually wrote me in for, I went and talked to them, and it was funny. I don't know who else had spoken to them, but, like, there were things that I would not have told them about Andy, you know, certain what I thought were private things, but they knew all about it. They started asking me about those things, and since this is a G-rated show, I won't bring those things up, but it was just, you know, it was really a wonderful thing that they wrote me in, and I was kind of like a compilation of myself, Andy's secretary, and his good friend Kathy.
Well, I really, knowing that you had known him in the past, I think you really worked flawlessly on the film. I think a lot of people that, you know, may not have been in great movies like that for many, many years, I don't think I could have done it in the way you did.
Who, me? Oh, thank
you
so much.
And I,
happened, Wendy, I have a question for you. Whatever happened to Kathy? I knew Kathy, too, through another friend.
Oh, Greg, you have no idea how much I have tried to hunt her down. Because, like, you know,
really?
Some people say other people might be writing a story about Andy or this or that. I mean, and she and I kept in contact for years, and then all of a sudden she disappeared. And, you know, I've left her messages, written letters. I would so love to talk to her, but it's been so long I don't even remember what I would have loved to talk to her about. But, yeah, that's a great question,
yeah.
Greg. I have no idea.
Yeah, I've had I was best friends with a guy she was living with, and Andy used to come over unannounced when we were there sitting in the living room. He would just show up to talk to Kathy. It was so funny.
Who
he was really close to Kathy.
Oh, absolutely. Now, who was your friend that she was living with?
Well, I don't know if I should say or not, but...
Oh, okay.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I know... She was married a few times. Her name was Kathy Utman Mage McCormick. I think she had three or four husbands. But really, my best times with Andy, my fondest memories, were the years that he was living with Kathy at the, I think they were called the La Cienega Towers on Sunset and La Cienega.
And I guess that
but
was way
I
before,
knew Mel sure.
That was way before she got involved with my friend.
Okay,
that,
so that was like after my time.
Friends. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very cool that Andy used to drop by.
Yeah. He was he was like that. He was the spur of the moment kind of guy.
Right. Now, Greg, did you used to go to his midnight snack shows at the Improv that Mel was producing also? He and Mel were putting those on?
Yeah, I went to a couple of those where they said they were only going to show in Hawaii and Alaska. Remember that? where they were, like, videotaping them, and they said, these will only be shown in Hawaii and Alaska. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
That's so
funny. The funniest thing I ever saw him do, which put me on the floor, was when he did the Bob Smuda came out in one of his shows as the masked magician and swallowed the sword, and Andy pushed the sword down more, and he stood up and the Bob spit up blood like he'd cut his stomach open. And I need to tell you, that was the funniest damn thing I ever saw in my life. I don't know how they came up with that, but
wow.
Did you ever see that bit?
I did.
No,
I wish I would have. That sounds amazing.
Oh, it was so good. This was like a kind of a weird, he had like a bunch of people sitting on stage, and he would let each of them do their little routine, and then he was kind of the ringleader or the ringmaster of this little circus. It was one of the, I don't know when it was, what period that was in, but it was really a good little show.
Was that at the Improv?
Yeah, that was at the Improv, yeah.
Well, maybe I did see it, because I remember him doing that one time, and his secretary, Linda Mitchell, well, he was doing his laundry. Was he doing his laundry on the stage while it was happening?
I don't know. I don't remember that, but he might have been eating a sandwich at one point where he had a sandwich brought up on stage, and he was always doing stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know one time he had his secretary come on stage as a nurse, and she lanced a boil on his back. He just never knew what he'd come up with.
I think that's why so many people took inspiration from the kind of comedy and the kind of person Andy Kaufman was, because he was so out there with his stuff that you didn't believe half the time what was real, what wasn't, what is he really going to do this? Like, and Greg, I know I remember your scene very well because of the artsy fartsy.
Yeah.
It was like, this is some artsy fartsy crap. So
well,
the movie is, I've seen it so many times.
That,
go ahead.
In that late 70s, well, mid to late 70s, there were so many good comedians, but it was all very, it was put on humor, and it was very hip and esoteric comedy with Albert Brooks, Steve Martin, Andy Kaufman, and a few others that were like, they assumed you were on the inside with them and you got it, and they weren't pandering to the audience. They were making the audience come to them, and there's not much of that left anymore, you know?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yes. That's very well stated, yeah.
Well, I guess my next question involved working with the legendary director Milos Forman. He had done so many great works before he got to Man on the Moon, and I think Jim Carrey probably drove him insane seeing the backstage footage that was shot.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit.
I mean,
I think he was having a good time with the whole thing. He got that Carrey was in character. Because, I mean, whenever I would talk to Jim on the set, he would be in character. He would never get out of the Andy Kaufman character on the set.
Right.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. I'm not sure many actors still do those kind of performances anymore. You really have to be into the character.
Right.
Yeah, I don't
know
any others. I've never met any others that do that. Have you, Wendy?
I missed the first part of the question. Others that do what?
Oh, that stay in character the whole time.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I've heard of others that do that, but Andy, oh my gosh. You know, he was once on Hollywood Squares, and they taped 5 episodes in one day. You know, you tape maybe 2 or 3 and then go to lunch with the cast. And it had to be so exhausting. He did it as Latka, and so at lunch, people would, you know, they'd be themselves and, you know, want to talk and everything. And he didn't get out of character even to be with, you know, any of the celebrities or anything. He was always in character.
Mm-hmm.
Never
yeah.
ever.
Yeah. He was the master at that. And
absolutely,
I remember
yeah.
him doing a, Andy, I'm talking about, doing a job as a busboy at a restaurant. Me and Mel went to, like, watch him be a busboy at a restaurant and just stay in character and, like, mess with people and, you know, drop plates and drop food on people. It was so ridiculous.
Yeah, I think he did that at Jerry's Deli and also this other little deli. I think it was on Santa Monica. And I know
yeah,
sometimes we go
Santa
over
Monica.
There.
Right. And he was
and
getting arguments with people about stuff. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. He totally would just be in character. And he, you know, he did stuff to just even amuse himself, not even to amuse other people. He told me, like,
mm-hmm.
one time he came back from New York, and he'd be walking down the street by himself, acting like he was a nut, saying, "Get your hand off of me!" You know, nobody, I mean, just talking to himself, and I thought, wow, you know, who would do that, you know?
Yeah,
I guess it all started
yeah.
in his room, you know, when he would entertain himself as a little boy, and he just always had that in him.
Yeah.
It's interesting you brought up Jerry's Famous Deli, because I've only been to California one time in my life, but I had to make sure I went to Jerry's Deli. And just kind of being there and thinking of that experience and looking through to the other side, like Danny DeVito in the film, just little stuff like that. It was really neat. It was a great restaurant, some of the best fried chicken I've ever had.
Wow,
so there you
yeah.
go. There you go.
A lot
yeah,
of people, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I was going to say, a lot of people like to think that maybe Jim Carrey didn't do a great performance, and of course there was some inconsistencies in the film. You know, what would you say to someone like that?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody could have done a better job of the onstage, like doing Andy performing, you know, with the congas and all that stuff. He was so amazing. Now, if I were making the film, in hindsight, what I would have done was have Nicolas Cage play Andy offstage, like just their normal Andy in his day-to-day stuff, and have Jim do the, like, I would have to, you know, and I mean, that might seem far-fetched, although people, you know, they had Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. I mean, they had, I think, a couple of actors playing the same part in the Beach Boys movie. And of all people, I mean, Andy had so many sides and facets to him. Because, like, I mean, I can't say enough about Jim Carrey. He's so talented and amazing. But the Andy that I knew kind of wasn't like the Andy on, you know, an off times, you know, with Jim play. Like, again, Jim was amazing. But I think if Jim had actually known Andy, you know, he would have known better how to play. I don't mean to criticize him. I'm just saying the Andy
right.
I knew was more like a quiet Nicolas Cage type in the off times.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it all has to do with the way the script was written and the story of the rise of his show business career and everything. And so you've got to kind of play those scenes the way they are. And I thought he did a great job playing it, you know, pretty close to the way Andy was.
Mm-hmm.
Andy was kind of an Andy Warhol type personality, where he was different for different people, so it would be really hard to kind of capture that. You know, I'm sure he was a different personality with his manager than he was with his girlfriend, than he was with his parents, because we all are, you know. So
absolutely, yes.
I thought he did a good job, you know, sort of capturing the show business side of what he was all about, you know. And you're right. I mean, Nicolas Cage would have probably been a different kind of, it would have been more moody and broody and a little bit more dramatic with Cage. But I thought for the kind of movie it is, they couldn't have done better than Jim Carrey. He was just amazing.
Oh, no, no. I mean, I definitely would have had Jim Carrey do all the show, you know, the on stage stuff, you know, because nobody.
Yeah, I think Nicolas Cage was in the running in the beginning. They were like,
That's the only reason that I thought of Nicolas Cage. And I don't know if you remember the T-shirts that they gave us, like black T-shirts with Andy in the Man on the Moon, Andy's face. And one time I was wearing that T-shirt, and someone said, "Oh, Nick Cage." And I thought, well, that's interesting, you know, because Andy's eyes and Nicolas Cage's eyes are kind of similar. They have that, you know, just a certain.
Yeah.
So I thought if, you know, just when, now Andy wasn't brooding, but he was quiet and he was kind of very serious. I mean, it's so hard to explain because,
well,
like,
I mean,
serious. I mean, he.
Yeah.
You know,
I
he
mean,
could be.
I would talk to him before he'd go on stage at the Improv or after when he was hanging out, and he always seemed to kind of broody and moody and, you know, kind of a serious character, you know.
Right,
like
right.
Joking around and laughing with other comedians like a lot of guys
not
do. He was
all,
always
never,
in
no.
Own, in his own head and, you know,
yes.
Always had, like he was deep in thought about something, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense. That's kind of why I brought it up, because I've seen interviews with Andy for numerous years, and a lot of times he just, like you said, seems kind of drowned and down and maybe in thought. He wasn't always on like Jim Carrey's Andy was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. I'm so glad you said that. He was so not on. He was the most on person I have ever met. Like someone would come up, like if we were at a table, you know, somewhere, someone might come up and go, "Oh, Andy, you're just wonderful. I'm a huge fan." And he'd go, "Uh-huh." You know, like he wouldn't, you know, if it was a girl, his response would be, you know, different and maybe more animated. But, you know, yeah, he just, you just encapsulated that perfectly, Ian. Yeah.
And I guess we are getting about out of time, but I did, I was curious, first off, if either of you guys ever talked to George Shapiro after the movie, because he's still going strong.
I'll let Greg go first.
I ran into him. I ran into him a couple of times afterwards, and actually, he was in the scene, a couple of the scenes that I was in as the network executive, and I guess he's, you know, he's doing really well. Yeah.
I mean, I'm very happy for all his success with Seinfeld and everything, but something kind of happened. You know, Andy and I had this falling out for a year. We didn't talk to each other. And then when we made up, like, I revered him, and I mean, it was wonderful. We were, you know, we were very close again, but somehow George remembered things in a different way, and he thought, you know, so he's kind of held a grudge against me, and but it's so weird because, like, one night we were having dinner. This was after Andy passed, and we were having dinner at Elaine Boozler's house, and George was there, and he was so nice to me and saying all these really nice, wonderful things, and I thought everything was great. But something between that time and the movie changed in him, and he kind of, and I felt very badly because, you know, I think George is terrific and whatever, you know, but he remembers things the way he remembers them, and Andy, and I don't know.
Well, I'm
so
sorry, I didn't mean to ruffle any feathers. I just figured,
it is what it is.
Since he was Andy's agent, I thought I was kind of curious, but. Last question I always like to everyone.
You opened up a whole can of worms, man.
I did. Seeing with this being a G-rated show. I better just move on. But we are almost out of town. The last thing I always like to ask everyone is what the future holds. So what does the future hold for Greg and Wendy?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I do comedy now and then, and I don't know if you know, I had brain surgery, and someone did a documentary and of like females who have used humor to deal with their trauma, and so that's available somewhere, I think. I forgot what it's called. It's called It Only Hurts When I Don't Laugh, or something like that. And so that's about it for me. I mean, I love life, every minute of it, and you know, I'm thrilled for anything and everything. And over
well,
to
bless
you,
your
Greg.
Heart. I'm glad you survived. I'm glad you survived all that one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Same here. Thank you.
Well, I'm down in trying to get some funding for some of my movies that I'm going to direct, and so I'm working hard doing that, and I'm still active. Don't do much comedy anymore, but I get up and play, but basically acting and filmmaking for me.
That's wonderful.
Absolutely. I'm glad, Wendy, that you got over that. I remember seeing the post, and that's anything that has to do with your brain or any kind of mental stuff is really unfortunate. So I'm glad you were able to get through that.
Thank you. I mean, I feel great. The only thing is half of my face is paralyzed, but I really, really think that if Andy were here, he would think it's a good face for comedy. You know, I think it's a good face for comedy too. So, and I think Andy would like it. So, I'd like to think so.
Well, I appreciate you guys joining me so much. I don't know how many times I've seen Man on the Moon in the last 20 years, more than I would like to admit, but it really is a great film. And I think it's definitely a cult classic because I still hear a lot of people talk about it to this day.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with everything.
Yes, best of luck to you guys, too. Thank you so much for joining me again.
Okay.
Thank you. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks.
You guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys. We are technically off the air, but we're still recording for the next few minutes before they actually hang up on me. So before that happens, I would like to get out what we got coming up. Of course, 2019 SoCon is coming up now, less than a month away, people. September 6th and 7th, 2019, at the Cross County Mall in Mattoon, Illinois. SoCon.com for information on that. Absolutely free event, so you don't have to worry about buying tickets. But to see who the up-to-date guests are, check out the website, the 2019 Dark History and Horror Con, October 26th and 27th, 2019, at the City Center in Champaign, Illinois. You can check out dhhcon.com for that. We will be back on August 16th with over 40 years as the lead singer of Helix. Brian Vollmer is going to be joining us, that legendary Canadian rock band. Now for that great Rock You song, He's also worked with the Trailer Park Boys on numerous things, including the animated series Countdown to Liquor Day, where he would play characters on that. And he also wrote songs for the Trailer Park Boys movie. August 20th, we welcome Italian-American actor Vito D'Ambrosio, who is best known for playing Anthony Tony Bellows in the 1990 and 2014 Flash television shows, and as the bow tie driver in The Untouchables. He's also been seen in Criminal Minds, Shameless, and so much more. August 26th, at a special 1 p.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, finally got that edited, we will welcome the return of actress and dialect coach Eliza Schneider, best known for her appearances on South Park from 1999 to 2003 as numerous of the female characters. She also was on Beakman's World, which I grew up adoring as a kid, so it's always nice to talk with Eliza Schneider. All right, guys, unless anything changes, August 16th is the next show, and if any changes are made, you can check out Cloverleaf Radio on Facebook, Anchor, YouTube, WordPress, Podbean, or any of our numerous Facebook pages for the up-to-date shows. Big thanks to Greg, Travis, and Wendy Poland for joining me today. It's always an honor talking to them, and I was honored to be able to bring you this radio reunion. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.